Mrs. McGinty had been murdered, apparently for a small sum of money, and her lodger, James Bentley, had been found guilty and sentenced to hang. But Superintendent Spence was not convinced, and asked me to go down to Broadhinny, where Mrs. McGinty had lived, to investigate the crime. I discovered that on the Sunday before her death, Mrs. McGinty had read a newspaper article about women who were associated with notorious murders. I believed that she had recognized one of the photographs in the paper, and that was why she had been killed. The superintendent was so concerned, he returned to Broadhinny straight away.
John Moffat as Hercule Poirot, Julia McKenzie as Ariadne Oliver, and George Baker as Superintendent Spence in Agatha Christie's Mrs. McGinty's Dead.
Women victims of bygone tragedies. What's the first name on your list?
Eva Kane. She had a passionate affair with the town clerk of Palminster, Alfred Craig, supposedly devoted to his wife and child.
Rather a nondescript little man, I seem to recall. Married to an exceedingly tiresome wife.
And Eva Kane was the young nursery governess. A pretty, trusting young girl, according to the Sunday Comet, seduced in her fragile youth by a cold-blooded murderer.
The wife suffered from various minor ailments, most of them probably imaginary. Craig told everyone she'd been ordered abroad for her health, and he'd taken her to the south of France.
And then returned home to lead a life of shameless sin with Eva Kane.
A few months later, he told everyone his wife had died abroad. Unfortunately for him, he also told one of her friends the name of the place where she died. Somebody checked up on his story, and there was no record of her death.
The police found her body in the cellar.
Poisoned with some kind of vegetable alkaloid.
And the unfortunate Miss Kane was charged as an accessory.
But before he was hanged, Craig made a full confession, which put her in the clear. Just as well, since the poor girl was pregnant.
According to the Sunday Comet, kindly relations in the Dominions offered her a home. Changing her name, the pitiful young girl left these shores to begin a new life.
So who's the next tragic victim?
Janice Courtland, married to a man who was given to peculiar practices. But after 8 years of martyrdom, it says she made friends with a young man
who walked in on some particularly nasty scene and knocked the husband into the fireplace. He broke his skull on the mantelpiece. He got off with 5 years for manslaughter.
And she, like Eva Kane, went abroad to forget. The next case is that of Lily Gamble, the tragic victim of an overcrowded age. Do you remember the case?
Oh, I remember her all right. And she wasn't much of a tragic victim. There was no room for her at home, so she went to live with her aunt. Auntie wouldn't let her go to the pictures, so Lily sloshed her with a meat chopper. She was only 12, so she was sent to an approved school.
By now, she is a free woman, free again to take her place in society. Her conduct during her years of confinement was exemplary. Does this not show it was not the child but the system that we must blame?
I doubt whether poor old auntie would have agreed with that. Any more?
There is one more. Vera Blake.
Doesn't ring a bell. Remind me.
She does not seem to have had much luck with her husbands. But then a knight in shining armor appeared and took her and her children off to a new life in the new world.
So, what's your theory? You think that Mrs. McGinty recognized one of these women living in Broadhinny?
Yes, and she wrote to the Sunday Comet.
Well, she'd have had her work cut out to identify anyone from these photographs.
But you could perhaps find better pictures of these women?
Well, I'll do my best. Did the Sunday Comet come up with anything?
They are sending me the original photographs. And I spoke to the woman who wrote the article, a Miss horse fall. She remembered the letter from Mrs. McGinty. She said she knew where there was a picture of one of the women and wanted to know how much they would pay her for the information.
So what did they say?
In the words of Miss Horsfall, they told her there was nothing doing. And since Mrs. McGinty's handwriting was so bad, they sent their letter to Broadway rather than Broadhinney.
So that was the end of that.
Mm.
But I'd better be getting back to my case of embezzlement. What's your next step?
So far, I have confined my investigation to the circumstances of the murder. Now it is time to broaden my inquiry. I shall begin, I think, with the local doctor, a man called Rendell.
Monsieur Hercule Poirot, our quiet little village is honored. What can I do for you? I'm devoured with curiosity to know what you're doing down here. Have we a crime in our midst?
In the past tense, not the present.
Past? I don't remember...
Mrs. McGinty.
Of course. How quickly one forgets. But that's all over and done with, surely.
If I mention this to you in confidence, I am employed by the defense to examine fresh evidence on which to lodge an appeal.
But what fresh evidence can there be?
Ah, that, alas, I am not at liberty to divulge.
Oh, of course. Please forgive me.
I came to you because I understand that Mrs. McGinty was occasionally employed here.
Yes, yes, she was. Would you care for a drink, Monsieur Poirot? Sherry? Whiskey?
Ah, sherry, if you please.
Ah, excellent. She used to come in once or twice a week to do the cleaning. The work that our housekeeper can't do any longer. Getting down on her knees, that sort of thing. She was an excellent worker, Mrs. McGinty.
Tell me, Doctor, was Mrs. McGinty a truthful person?
Truthful? What an odd question. I don't think I ever had the opportunity of knowing.
If she made a statement to anyone, do you think that statement would probably be true?
I have no idea. I could ask the housekeeper.
Oh, no. It would be better not to do that. Oh, thank you, Doctor.
You're arousing my curiosity. What was she going around saying?
You must understand this is very hush-hush at the moment. I am only at the beginning of my investigation.
Well, you'll have to hurry up if you're going to save Bentley from the gallows. We were all quite sure he'd done it. There didn't seem any room for doubt.
Just an ordinary crime, would you say?
Yes. That just about sums it up.
You knew James Bentley?
Well, he came to see me professionally once or twice. Mostly imaginary ailments, coddled by his mother, I fancy. Though he's not the only case of that here.
Is that so?
Oh, yes. Mrs. Upwood positively dotes upon that son of hers. He's a clever fellow, of course. But not as clever as he thinks. Bit of a budding playwright, is young Robin.
They have been here long?
3 or 4 years. Nobody has been in Broadhinney very long. The original village was only a handful of cottages grouped around long meadows. You're staying there, I understand.
I am.
They've neither of them got the foggiest notion of how to run a guest house. She used to live in India with servants running around all over the place. And he'll never make anything of the market garden business he's trying to set up. Maureen's a charming creature, but he's rather inclined to be moody and has the devil of a temper. He gets it from his father. Old General Summerhayes was a regular Tartar.
Perhaps it would have been better if the Major had stayed in the army. But I must not keep you from your patients, Doctor.
Well, there's still a few minutes before surgery starts.
Oh.
And it's so fascinating to have the chance of talking to a real professional. My wife and I are terribly crime-minded.
Do you read criminology, detective stories, or the Sunday papers?
All three.
Do you descend as low as the Sunday Comet?
Oh, what would the weekend be without it?
There was a curious article some time ago about women who had been involved in murder cases and how their lives had been ruined.
Yes, I remember it. Women victims of bygone tragedies. A lot of rubbish, really.
You think so? Where are these women now, the article wanted to know.
I bet they all kept their past pretty dark. Not that you'd recognize any of them from those photographs.
Well, I must not detain you any longer, Doctor. You have been very kind.
Not much help, I'm afraid. Oh, but you must meet my wife. She was immensely interested to hear you were down here. Sheila? Sheila? Come down here. There's somebody you simply must meet.
But Mrs. Rendell gave me the impression that I was the last person on earth she would have wished to meet. Her pale blue eyes stared at me apprehensively. She stammered a few words and took the first opportunity to run off back upstairs.
She'd never have forgiven me if she'd missed you. It has been a great pleasure, Monsieur Poirot. Do feel free to drop in whenever you wish.
And so I made my way to the next house on my list. Hunter's Close, the home of the Weatherbys, was a solid, if neglected-looking, Victorian mansion.
I'm sorry to have taken so long to answer the door. Goodness only knows where the girl's got to. Please come in.
Thank you, mademoiselle.
You are Miss Weatherby?
My name is Deirdre Henderson. Mr. Weatherby is my stepfather.
I am making inquiries about Mrs. McGinty. I believe she used to work here.
But she's dead.
I know that.
Is it about insurance or something?
Oh, no. It is not about the insurance. It is a question of fresh evidence. My name is Hercule Poirot, and I am engaged by the defense to make inquiries on behalf of James Bentley.
Oh, you mean it might have been someone else who killed her?
It may well have been. But at the moment I am trying to find out more about Mrs. McGinty herself.
What do you want to know?
Well, to begin with, what did you yourself think of her?
Oh, I don't know. Nothing in particular.
Was she silent or talkative? Curious or did she keep things to herself? A nice woman or not a very nice woman?
She certainly talked a lot. I didn't really like her very much. Perhaps you ought to come see my mother. She's upstairs in her room.
Mrs. Weatherby was a small woman, lying on a sofa in a large, airless room crowded with knick-knacks and Middle Eastern souvenirs. She had a box of chocolates by her side and a glass of orange juice.
You must forgive my not getting up, Monsieur Poirot, but Dr. Rendell does insist on my taking a rest during the day, and everyone scolds me if I don't do what I'm told.
He wants to know about Mrs. McGinty, Mother.
Mrs. McGinty? Who was Mrs. McGinty?
She used to work for us, Mother. You know, the one who was murdered.
Oh, don't, darling. It was all so horrid. I couldn't sleep for weeks afterwards. So stupid to keep our money under the floor. But do please sit down, Monsieur Poirot. Deirdre, move the photo album and the Indian spice box and the little pincushion, dear.
Very well, Mother.
So that Monsieur Poirot has somewhere to sit.
Thank you, madame.
I'm devoured with curiosity. Dr. Rendell rang and told me we had a celebrated criminologist in our midst.
I understand that Mrs. McGinty came to you every Wednesday, and it was on a Wednesday that she died. So had she been here on that day?
I suppose so. Well, it's all so long ago.
Did she say anything to you on that day? Anything special?
Oh, that class of person always talks a lot. One doesn't really listen. And anyway, she couldn't tell she was going to be killed and robbed that night, could she?
There is cause and effect.
I don't see what you mean.
Perhaps I do not see myself. Not yet. One works through darkness towards light. Do you take in the Sunday papers, Mrs. Weatherby?
Of course. The Sunday Times and the Observer.
Mrs. McGinty read the Sunday Comet.
I'm not at all surprised. She would. It's all very upsetting. That horrible lodger of hers. Apparently he was quite an educated man, too. That makes it worse, doesn't it?
Does it?
Oh, yes. Such a brutal crime. A meat chopper. Disgusting.
The police never found the weapon.
They dragged the ponds. I saw them.
Oh, don't be morbid, darling. You know I hate thinking of things like that.
Did Mrs. McGinty...
No more questions, please. It's bad for her. She can't even read detective stories.
Oh, my apologies. I have only one excuse. A man is to be hanged in 3 weeks' time. If he did not do it...
But of course he did it. Of course he did.
I am not so sure. But thank you for answering my questions, madam.
What do you mean you're not sure?
I meant what I said, mademoiselle.
You've upset my mother. She hates things like robbery and murders and violence.
It must have come as a great shock to her when a woman who actually worked for her here was killed.
Oh, yes, it was. She couldn't bear to hear anything about it. And to make matters worse, we haven't been able to find anyone to take her place. Mrs. McGinty may have talked a lot, but she was a splendid worker. The girl we've got now is absolutely useless. But, of course, nothing is like what it used to be.
And do you mind that so much, mademoiselle?
I don't know. But it's different for my mother. She lives in the past a lot. She keeps all sorts of things to remind her. Old magazines, dozens of letters, old photographs. I can't understand it myself. I never keep anything.
You look forwards, not back.
I don't know that I look anywhere. I mean, today is usually enough, isn't it?
The door opened, and a tall, pale, elderly man with a thin face and mean, pale little eyes came into the hall.
My stepfather, Mr. Weatherby. This is Monsieur Poirot.
Mr. Weatherby was clearly not impressed. He looked at me coldly and passed on. His only concern was that his luncheon was going to be late. There was an icy dislike in the look he gave his stepdaughter, and something like hatred in the eyes that stared back at him. I returned to Long Meadows for luncheon. Oh, it was a terrible mistake. And a stewed oxtail, watery potatoes, and what Mrs. Summerhayes optimistically hoped might turn out to be pancakes. They were a lamentable failure. I left as quickly as I decently could and made my way up the hill towards Laburnum's, the home of the wealthy Mrs. Upward and of her son, the promising playwright Robin Upward. And then something suddenly struck me on the back of the head. It was an apple core, and a curiously familiar face, crowned with untidy billows of grey hair, looked at me out of the car window.
I'm so sorry. Did I hit you?
Oh, most certainly. But, oh, surely, it is Mrs. Oliver, is it not?
Oh, Monsieur Poirot! What a splendid surprise. Is this Laburnum's?
I believe so, madame.
Then do you think you could help me out? I'm rather stiff after the long drive.
Of course, madame.
Oh, Lord, there goes my bag of apples.
I fear they have fallen in the mud.
Oh, well, never mind. I'm sure there will be plenty of apples down here. But what are you doing in Broadhinney? After a murder, I suppose.
Your supposition is quite correct, madame.
I hope it's not my hostess, Mrs. Upward.
No, it is not Mrs. Upward. I am about to call on her.
Actually, it's her son I've come down here to see, Robin. He's supposed to be dramatizing a book of mine.
Oh, my felicitations, madame.
Everyone tells me he's very clever. If he's so clever, I don't see why he doesn't write a play of his own. Leave my poor Finn alone.
Your Finn? Ah, yes, your detective, Sven Hjersen.
He's not even a Finn anymore. He's become a member of the Norwegian resistance movement. But tell me about your murder or whatever it is.
No, it is not a very picturesque story. An old charwoman who was murdered and robbed 5 months ago, Mrs. McGinty. A young man was convicted and sentenced to death.
And he didn't do it, but you know who did, and you're going to prove it.
No, you go too fast. I do not yet know who did it. And there is very little time for me to find out if I am to save this young man from the gallows.
Men are so slow. I'll soon tell you who did it. A woman's intuition, that's what you need.
Hello? Oh. Avni, is that you?
Here I am, Robin. Don't worry, I'll be very discreet.
No, madame, I do not wish you to be discreet. I want everyone to know who I am.
Ariadne, my precious. How clever of you to find your way here. I can't tell you how happy I am to see you. I've had the most marvellous idea for the second act.
Have you? Robin, this is Hercule Poirot.
Splendid. Come on in and have a drink, both of you, and meet the madre.
Laura Upward was sitting in a wheeled chair by the fireplace, a vigorous-looking woman with iron-grey hair, a determined chin, and lively, intelligent eyes.
It's such a pleasure to meet you, Mrs. Oliver. I expect you hate people talking about your books. but they've been an enormous solace to me for years, and especially since I've been a cripple.
That's very nice of you. May I introduce Hercule Poirot, an old friend of mine? We met by chance just outside your house. Actually, I hit him with an apple core. Rather like William Tell, only the other way round.
How do you do, Monsieur Poirot?
Madame.
Robin, get some drinks, will you?
Of course, Madame.
Are you a writer too, Monsieur Poirot?
Oh, no, he's a detective. The Sherlock Holmes kind. And he's come here to solve a murder.
So, Maureen Summerhayes was right. She told me some long rigmarole about having a detective staying in the house. She seemed to think it was frightfully funny, but it's quite serious, is it?
Of course it's serious. You've got a murderer in your midst.
But who's been murdered? Or is it somebody that's been dug up and it's all frightfully hush-hush?
Oh, no, it is not in the least hush-hush.
Some charlady who was murdered last autumn.
But that's all over. I thought it was something new.
Oh, it's not over at all. They arrested the wrong man and he'll be hanged if Monsieur Poirot doesn't find the real murderer in time.
Is this really true? Or is it a joke?
No, it is not a joke, madame.
White lady for you, Madre.
Oh, thank you, dear boy.
And a glass of sherry for you, Ariadne, darling.
Is sherry all right for you, Monsieur Poirot?
Thank you, Mr. Upward.
Well, here's to crime.
Oh, to crime.
Mm. She used to work here, you know.
Mrs. McGinty?
Yes, didn't she, Madre?
Well, she came one day a week.
What was she like?
Terribly respectable and maddeningly tidy. She had a ghastly way of clearing up everything and putting things into drawers.
Which is just as well. If somebody didn't clear things away at least once a week, we shouldn't be able to move.
I know, Madre, I know. But as I've explained a thousand times, unless things are left where I put them, I simply can't work at all. My notes get all disarranged.
So annoying to be as helpless as I am. I long to be able to do things for myself.
What is it? Arthritis?
Some form of it. I shall have to have a permanent nurse companion soon, I'm afraid. And I hate having to depend on people.
Well, now, darling, don't get yourself all worked up.
Robin's as good as a daughter to me, Mrs. Oliver.
Oh, yes, I'm sure.
He does everything and thinks of everything. No one could be more considerate.
Madre.
After a little while, I made my excuses and left. My last call of the day was at the house of Mr. and Mrs. Carpenter. It was evident that a good deal of money had been spent on it, for Mr. Carpenter was extremely rich and had hopes of becoming the local Member of Parliament.
Mr. and Mrs. Carpenter are not at home, sir.
Evidently he suspected that I was hoping to sell them something, and so I made my way round to the garden, where I encountered a tall young woman in a mink coat, with platinum blonde hair and eyes the colour of cornflower blue.
What the hell do you want?
I was hoping to see Mr. or Mrs. Carpenter. Have I the pleasure of addressing Mrs. Carpenter?
I am Mrs. Carpenter.
Ah, my name is Hercule Poirot.
Yes?
I wish to ask you a few questions concerning a domestic matter.
We've got a Hoover, thank you.
Oh, no, madame, you misunderstand me.
Oh, you mean one of those stupid household questionnaires?
No, madame. The questions I have to ask you relate to a Mrs. McGinty who died, who was killed last November.
Mrs. McGinty? I don't know who you mean.
You do not remember her murder? Or is murder so common in Brittany that you did not even notice it?
Oh, the murder. Yes, of course. I'd quite forgotten what the old lady's name was.
Although she worked for you in this house?
She didn't. I wasn't living here then. Mr. Carpenter and I were only married 3 months ago.
But she did work for you. On Friday mornings, I think it was. You were then Mrs. Selkirk and living at Horace Cottage.
If you know the answers to everything, I don't see why you need to ask questions. Anyway, what is this all about?
I am conducting an investigation into the circumstances of Mrs. McGinty's murder.
Why? What on earth for? And why have you come to us?
You might know something that might help me.
I don't know anything at all. Why should I? She was only a stupid old charwoman who somebody robbed and murdered. It was quite beastly, like the things you read about in the Sunday papers.
Ah, yes. Like the stories in the Sunday Comet. Do you read the Sunday Comet, madame?
I can't stand any more of this. Guy! Guy, help me, for goodness sake! Guy!
But she could not manage to find her way through the French windows back into the house. I was reminded of a beautiful moth battering itself vainly against the pane of glass.
What on earth's the matter, darling?
This man here, he's a foreigner. He's just walked in here and started asking me all sorts of horrid questions about that murder last year. The old charwoman, you know I hate things like that.
What do you mean by barging onto our property and annoying my wife?
Oh, the last thing I should wish is to annoy so charming a lady. I hoped only that since the deceased woman used to work for your wife, she might be able to assist me in my investigation.
What investigation? The case is over and done with, surely.
Oh, no, there you are in error, Mr. Carpenter. It is far from over and done with.
But you're nothing to do with the police, are you?
No, that is correct. I am working independently of the police.
He's something to do with the press. He mentioned the Sunday Comet.
The Sunday Comet? I don't often get around to reading that, I'm afraid. Please understand that my wife is very sensitive. I'm sure it can't be necessary for you to question her about this. After all, she hardly knew the woman.
She was only a stupid old charwoman. I told him so. And she was a frightful liar, too.
Ah, now that is most interesting. So, Mrs. McGinty told lies. That may give me a very valuable lead.
Well, I don't see how.
What lies did she tell, madame?
Stupid things about people. Things that couldn't possibly be true.
I see. She had a dangerous tongue.
No. I didn't mean as much as that. She wasn't in the least bit dangerous. She was just a silly gossip, that's all.
Just a gossip. Well, I regret if I have caused Madame any pain. These affairs are always rather unpleasant.
The whole business was most distressing. Naturally, my wife doesn't like to be reminded of it. I'm sorry we can't help you with any more information, Mr...
My name is Hercule Poirot.
Oh, yes. Well, goodbye, Mr. Poirot.
As I walked down the long drive, I could not forget the image of Mrs. Carpenter trying to find her way through the French windows. She must have been severely short-sighted, but too vain to wear spectacles. And then I remembered the photograph in the Sunday Comet of the schoolgirl with thick, ugly lenses in her glasses. Was it possible that Mrs. Carpenter, with her platinum hair and cornflower blue eyes, was the child who had savagely murdered her aunt? Could she be Lily Gamble?
In part two of Agatha Christie's Mrs. McGinty's Dead, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat. Ariadne Oliver, Julia McKenzie, Superintendent Spence, George Baker. Mrs. Weatherby, Rosalind Knight, Deirdre Henderson, Teresa Gallagher. Mrs. Upwood, Jill Balkan, Robin Upwood, Nick Waring. Eve Carpenter, Angela Sims, Guy Carpenter, Dominic Colchester. Dr. Rendell, Gerard McDermott. Mrs. McGinty's Dead is dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.